Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, hi, it's Jen. And I know it's Wednesday, but we are taking the week off of our usual news style episode to get some things in order for upcoming shows. But I thought this would be the perfect time to air an interview Jess and I did all about red lipstick and red lips in general. So in this episode, we speak with Rachel Felder. She's a journalist who specializes in writing about trends, fashion, and beauty. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, the Financial Times, and many others. She's written several books, including Red Lipstick, which she published in 2019. So that's when we interviewed her to celebrate the launch of the book. And in this interview, you'll hear her talk about how red lipstick is having a moment. But I would argue its moment is even bigger now. Or maybe this fall and this winter, red was just kind of everywhere. And here we are on Valentine's Day, whether you celebrate or not, and whether you're going out or not, red is the color of love and power and strength. And I thought, what better time to revisit this interview than now? So without further ado, let's go back in a little time machine. Here's Rachel Felder.
Welcome, Rachel.
Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I listen to this podcast, so yeah. It makes me super happy to be here.
Oh, that's so great. Good. Okay, so who do you think you are writing about red lipstick? Why are you the expert on red lipstick?
No, let's say it differently. How could anyone else on the planet be the author of the red lipstick book? This is my book. I have been wearing red lipstick every day for decades. I go to the gym in red lipstick. I will never leave the house without red lipstick. Even if I'm walking the dog, there's red lipstick on. So the real accurate answer to that question is, how could I allow any other author to own this subject? Because this is my subject.
And you have experience as a beauty journalist, right?
So it's not. Oh, yeah. I've written extensively about beauty for many outlets, including a lot for the New York Times and others. And I write a lot about beauty and fashion and craftsmanship in the context of real life. And that is what most interests me about red lipstick, actually, that it's a reflection of the zeitgeist of many periods. And so, yes, this is my field of expertise, really, truly, but it's also my civilian field of expertise.
It's a passion.
It's a passion, yeah. And it's sort of become a de facto trademark, not on purpose. It just happened that way.
So you mentioned, you know, like the zeitgeist and how it has like this historical kind of, you know, connection that makes it so interesting more than, let's say, like, you know, mascara, or, you know, maybe there's a mascara book being written right now, but you know what I'm saying.
Maybe we should write that book. Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah. Can you stay away from that?
Fine. Okay. If this one sells really well, the follow-up could be like pink lipstick or
primer.
Primer. Yeah.
But that was a good example. Primer doesn't really have the same historical
status. Somehow, right? Yeah.
Primer, like glossy sticks. I don't know. But let's talk about the history of red lipstick. So when did people start reddening their lips, and why did they do it?
So people started reddening their lips so many hundreds of years ago, around 2500 BC. And some of it was just that it makes your lips look more attractive. It enunciates your lips in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to get a red colorant from a lot of natural things. So the first people that reddened their lips used essentially ground stones. And through the eras of civilization, different materials have been, including many, many natural materials, have been used to actually make the red for the lips, including cochineal, which is it's ground beetles. Yes. And Cleopatra used it, and it's still used in many lipsticks. That's just—
Is that carmine? What's the thing?
Yeah,
with carmine?
Carmine is related to that too. Yeah. And you know, a lot of these ingredients aren't used so much anymore because of chemicals
and
yeah, and technology, and but some of them still are.
So Kat, remember Kat Von D and RMS, I think they both reformulated or made it very clear that they could not have
carmine,
that ingredient in their lipsticks.
Yeah.
And it gives like a very true red, and they were saying like, oh, we had to have an orangey red because we couldn't get that true red because it comes from an animal byproduct.
Exactly.
So you mentioned the Egyptians. Who else is like colored their lips with red, and what did they use?
Well, I mean, so many in the different eras of time, you know, Queen Elizabeth, yes, colored her lips. Queen Elizabeth, you know, my favorite story in the book, I have to say.
Yeah, you write about this
is,
in the book.
Doesn't exactly answer that question, but I'm just going to tell you anyway. Mm-hmm. Queen Elizabeth II commissioned a red lipstick for her coronation to match the color of her regal gowns that she had to wear for the coronation.
Oh, my God, that is so baller.
Isn't that great? And it's called Balmoral Red because her country estate is called Balmoral. But that was one of the weirdest reporting aspects of the book because as I started to dig deep, I found this out, and there were various brands, three of them, that didn't exactly claim to have produced that red lipstick for her, but people had connected dots over the years, particularly in the UK, and made assumptions of which brand it might be. So I called all those brands, and each of them said, no, we didn't make that lipstick. They more correctly couldn't confirm that they made the lipstick.
Isn't that how it is with the
royalty? I feel like so much of it is like evasive.
Like Creed used to do fragrances for them but could never say it made fragrances for the – yeah.
Exactly. So I called Buckingham Palace.
No, you didn't.
I swear to God I did. And I tried to get them to confirm. And they thought I was just insane. And I was trying all these ways.
They're like, you don't want to know what Meghan Markle wore today?
Exactly.
You're
exactly.
Like, no, I'm going to go back a couple.
Exactly. So, no, they would not confirm it either. So I know it's true that it was made, but I couldn't confirm the brand name.
I feel like Charlotte Tilbury should definitely reissue
Balmoral
Red.
Thinking the same thing.
Wow.
It'd be good, right?
Because she has like a queen lipstick, but it's not, it's called the queen, but
it's
not.
I feel like it would be like a peachy pinky probably.
It's like a plummy color.
And it's on brand for her because it's British and
We were just talking about colorants that have been used in history, and the weirder one that I noticed in your book was blood was mixed in with some colorants.
Well, blood has been mixed in. I mean, there's been certain eras that people have mixed beet juice in. Look, there's a lot of red things.
Yeah.
And our modern knowledge of what might get spoiled or go bad was different hundreds of years ago. So yes, blood was one of the many things people have used throughout history.
So when we think about like lipstick today, when did that come about? Like the lipstick that you picture?
Well, literal lipstick as opposed to lip coloring has only been in existence since the late 1800s. And the brand that actually made the first commercially available lipstick, literally lipstick, was Guerlain in 1884.
Oh.
And before that, what we would call lipstick really wasn't in a stick. It was in
like a
pot.
Yeah.
Right, right. And the fact that there was a portable lipstick was a huge development in all this because prior to that time, you had to put on your lip coloring sitting at a dressing table in your boudoir. Mm-hmm. So this really changed everything.
So this was for like the girl on the go. This is kind of a a more, like you said, like a sociological moment here.
Yes.
What were people doing that they needed a red lipstick on the run?
Well, you always need a red lipstick on the run.
Working in the factories, suffragettes, Victorian times,
well,
I don't know.
Well, I mean, you eat a vinaigrette dressing, you go out to dinner, you need a red lipstick with you. But yeah, so basically that was the first one, but that came wrapped in sort of silk wrap. And the first lipstick tube was initially in a push-up, and that was, I believe, 1912. I'm checking my little notes here. 1905, sorry.
So you didn't twist it. You, like, pushed color from the bottom.
1915. It's good to put on the reading glasses when you have notes in front of you.
1915 is when you first got it in, like, a tube.
In a tube. I've held some of those in my hand. They have a little push-up mechanism on the side.
Why do they call it a bullet?
Because the lipstick that we know today, that was invented in 1922. And that's the bullet shape we all know. And they call it a bullet because literally the inspiration for the shape was bullets from World War I.
Oh, how interesting. And who did the first bullet?
That is a man named James Bruce Mason Jr. And he invented
it. You don't know James Bruce Mason Jr.?
He was an inventor. But then brands just started to use it.
That's so funny.
He really should have protected that trademark, I think. He would have done much better.
Yes.
So you talk about, through your book, iconic moments in red lipstick. What are some that have stood out to you while you were doing your reporting, like women and or moments when red lipstick really took center stage?
Right. Well, you mentioned the suffragettes, and that's a major moment.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So the suffragettes, who were the women that were fighting for the right to vote, for women's right to vote in America, but also the UK and also France, for example, they wore red lipstick. That was their armor. That was their virtual uniform. They dressed in white and they wore the red lipstick, because the magical thing about red lipstick versus lipstick is it's powerful, but it's feminine. It's not just we are strong, it's we are strong and proud to be female. That's, to me, why it's so wonderful that people like AOC wear it, because it still means all that. And
is this weird? I just got chills. I like this.
It's powerful. Red lipstick is...
I don't know. I was like, yes, preach.
Red lipstick is a tool of empowerment that is comparatively affordable, that looks good on everybody, and is easy to pull off. I know some people think it's not easy to pull off, but trust me, it's easy to pull off.
Oh, we have questions about that.
We'll get there. But I would argue that many of the other accessories women use to feel and look powerful and to communicate power and to feel empowered are adaptations of menswear.
Yeah, like shoulder pads or something.
Bingo, exactly. Yeah. Shoulder pads, blazer, quote-unquote business suit. They're all modifications of men's pieces. Mm-hmm. Red lipstick is the feminist tool.
I think even heels used to be men wore heels
back
in the day, right?
Correct, like in the 1700s. Wow. Yep, yep.
Can we just go back a little bit? I was really interested in something that you wrote about the lipstick wars. What is that?
Well, it's a perfect segue from women's empowerment, because one thing that cosmetics afforded women over the last 100 years was a way to have a really successful career in an era when most successful business owners were male. Mm-hmm. And there's this beautiful tradition of women entrepreneurs that created lipstick and makeup brands and had vast success. And two of them very famously hated each other a lot. Mm-hmm. And that was Helena Rubinstein and Elizabeth Arden. And they were contemporaries. And their businesses had a lot of similar offerings. And they hated each other. And so they used to do these things to piss off the other one, like opening salons within a couple blocks of one another, for example.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was messy, but kind of deliciously messy.
Now, what decade are we talking about here?
They started around 1910, 1912, 1915, kind of vain, and they were going for decades, really. Mm-hmm. And then there were other female entrepreneurs. I mean, one of the cool things about a book is that you get to mention these important people that maybe wouldn't be so well known mm-hmm. otherwise. Like when people talk about that lipstick wars moment, they often talk about Charles Revson and Revlon because he was the male contemporary and the male competition. But in about the same era of the peak of the lipstick wars, 40s, 50s, there was an incredible woman named Hazel Bishop. And she was a graduate of Barnard College, and she was a chemistry major, and she had planned to become a doctor. And it was the Depression, and she couldn't afford – she and her family couldn't afford medical school. So she started tinkering in the kitchen, and she came up with a lipstick formula that was unique. And she was a major entrepreneur of the era. And, you know, that was just not an era that women typically owned – million-dollar businesses.
Did she have a brand name that we
She
might...
did. It was called Hazel Bishop. And if you were a lot older, you would know it. Because
how long did that last? How long was that
It lasted for decades. And in the early days of television, she sponsored quiz shows on TV. Mm-hmm. And the brand became so successful that Charles Revson from Revlon felt threatened and started to buy advertising on quiz shows and bought her out and basically drove her out of business.
We got Helena. We got Elizabeth. We got Charles.
Where does Estee Lauder fit into this?
She was a little later. She absolutely is
like
an example of, right, she started a little later. And then, although it's not lipstick, one of the women that I just think is incredible in this field is Madame C.J. Walker.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, you want to just give a quick explainer for our listeners?
Yes. The brilliant goddess, Madame C.J. Walker, mm-hmm. in the 1800s, she was African-American, and she had a really tough time in that era because she was female and she was a woman of color. And she saw that none of the beauty brands were paying any attention to the needs of African-American skin and hair, which had, you know, needs.
It's different. Yeah,
it's different.
Right.
It's
different hair needs.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And so she created products aimed at that market, and she became a millionaire, which in that era was, you know, like being a billionaire today.
Such an important figure in beauty. And like we see the same thing happening right now.
Right.
Her brand's still around. I mean,
yeah.
She's not, but
right,
the name
yeah.
persists.
That's right. I think she's just an important person in the
history
financial
beauty, yeah.
business history of the world. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing.
Do you think any of like – so as you're reading about the lipstick wars, which obviously involved a lot of players it sounds like, do you think any of that sort of persists today with the way that we – you know, aggressive marketing tactics in the beauty industry? Has there been anything that like has stayed on? Like, I don't know, when you look at how things are marketed to women today, do you see any influence from back then?
Not really. I think that was a personal vendetta thing.
Would they like undercut each other on price and stuff like
all
that?
All of it, yes.
Yeah.
And one would come up with a cream that had certain claims, and then the other one would come up with a cream that had exactly the same claims. Remember, it was a different era. It's not like there were organizations regulating advertising the way they are now, or regulating labeling like mm-hmm. the people did now. And there wasn't the competition in terms of places to carry your things either. There was more of a culture of salons that you would sell your products in. So that was different too.
Got it. It's very different. Okay, let's talk about a little bit more modern, move up to MAC. So we're like, we're getting into the 70s, 80s, 90s here. A lot of women think of that as like they make iconic red lipsticks. And I learned something from your book about Russian red.
Okay, wait. Can I just interrupt that?
Yes.
Makes me so incredibly happy because my goal was to create a red lipstick book that I learned things from
yeah.
and that didn't
mm-hmm.
speak
even,
down to
even
me.
Even we beauty editors didn't know about.
Well, and that makes me so happy. And I mean, I did do super duper extensive research, but you hope that some of the people that would read this book and appreciate it are your listeners who come in knowing a lot about beauty
yeah.
and still would learn things. So yeah. that makes me super happy.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about MAC's famous red lipsticks.
Right. So there was this moment in the late 80s that very highly pigmented matte red lipstick had a serious moment. And MAC Russian Red was one of the biggies in that time period, and it was created actually for Madonna for her Blonde Ambition tour, and that was 1990, I believe, and it was super duper matte. And the original plan for that lipstick was that it was going to be called Verushka after the famous 60s model from the film Blow Up, and she wouldn't let them use her name,
Shverushka.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was called Russian Red.
So the Russian comes from her, not like
indeed
a color of Moscow architecture or something.
Well, and I've seen the film Blow Up, brilliant Antonioni film, many times. I haven't watched it recently. But that period in the 60s was not a big colored lip moment. That was a big super pale lip and eye moment.
Yeah.
So I think it's not what she wore in the movie either, actually.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird that they wanted to name it Verushka.
And before you go on with that, you actually mentioned something else from your book. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to learn that you were saying that the things that you see in a movie, what the actress is wearing, wouldn't necessarily affect the times of the movie and when it takes place, but what the audience was looking like. For example, Vivian Leigh in
Gone with the Wind.
She was wearing a bright red lip. She wasn't going to be wearing a bright red lip if it was the middle of the Civil War, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess it was then the 40s or 50s when the movie came out, so that's why.
This is exactly right. It was actually the late 30s, but that is exactly right.
I was no way. Of course you want to see yourself on film, so they made it like trendy.
Correct. And remember that in that era, lipstick was red lipstick. It's not like you saw a lot of women in real life wearing pale, pale lipstick. You wore red lipstick. That was the shade of lipstick.
So the pale moment was like the 60s. Like that kind of knocked red lipstick off the map
for a while. For a while, yes. And it wasn't so big in the 70s either.
Yeah.
It went from in the 60s that very pronounced big eye and no lip like Twiggy. And then in the 70s there was a move for a while towards a very natural look. Like think of Cheryl Teagues or Farrah Fawcett, that kind of
like
look.
A glossy,
exactly
glossy
right,
moment.
exactly. But to go back to Mac, they created this beautiful, very matte, highly pigmented blue red, Russian red, and when they decided that to switch things up a little bit, when that super matte moment passed, as inevitably happens, they reconfigured their red lipsticks, and what became Russian Red had a creamier texture and was just about the same color. And then the old Russian Red is what's Ruby Woo now.
Did you know that?
I didn't realize that. I remember the Russian Red like as a skew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still around.
It's still around.
I didn't know, but I didn't know that that's the same thing as Ruby Woo.
Ruby Woo is the old Russian Red.
Ruby Woo is the old Russian Red. And if you put them side by side or you wear them side by side, Russian Red, the finish is different, and I find it a little darker. I think they may have slightly tweaked the colors, but...
Because Ruby Woo, I feel like, is a little bit brighter than how it... Because I think of Russian Red, I think of, like, Madonna when she was trying to dress like Marlena Dietrich.
Right.
She was wearing that Russian Red. It feels a little bit darker. But I'm not a scientist here.
Well, the other thing is, you know, your base lip color affects it.
Yeah.
People look in at an ad and they see a lipstick in a tube and they think it's going to look like that on them.
Yeah.
And the three of us could wear the same red lipstick and look very different.
Sure.
And then also people have these things they do, like they put foundation under the lipstick, which I strongly don't advise. and so the payoff is different.
Yeah.
Or if you line your lips all the way with liner underneath, then that's going to be different.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Thank you.
Listen, there are so many skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, and you know I will try most of them. But how do you know your products are actually working? Some research to back up the claims. That's why Jess and I are all about Ritual. They created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted a clinical study to take the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual's Hyacera is now a part of my skincare routine, and I got in the habit of taking it every day by putting the cute little purple jar right next to my sunscreen. It looks nice on my vanity, and let's be honest, I love that. But once I stuck with the habit, I really noticed a difference in my skin. I am not the only one. In a clinical study, taking Hyacera for 90 days led to a 3.6-time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles as compared to placebo. And it led to a 2.9 increase in skin smoothness. I also like that they're easy to swallow. The capsules sort of taste like vanilla. They're not all weird and fishy like some other supplements. Plus, Ritual is a certified B Corp, something we learned about on a recent episode. And all their supplements, including the Daily Protein and their Sleep Bio Series Melatonin Supplement, are vegan, gluten-free, and made traceable. Do what Jess and I did. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off.
I might be putting you on the spot here, but we talked about, we went up through history sort of with all the red lipsticks in history. What are some of the best-selling reds these days?
Well, I think that's a complicated answer because they're different in different territories.
Okay.
The U.S.
So the U.S., I mean, I don't have sales figures in front of me. I know that max top five, three of them are always reds at least.
Wow,
yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, it's very hard to have a lipstick line and not have a great red. And when you think of the new lipstick brands that have launched over the past decade, the ones that are lipstick-centric, like let's think of
– Lipstick Queen.
Lipstick Queen, mm-hmm. Troye Sivrat, Bite, you know, these ones that are very mm-hmm. lipstick-centered – they are all really anchored with great reds. You can't not do a great red.
I have a question. So, well, first of all, you say you can't not do a great red, but also there are so many more colors in the spectrum too. Do you feel like that red lipstick is as popular? I mean, you just mentioned a couple of brands that have great reds, but just from your gut instinct. Do you feel red lipstick is having a moment right now?
I do think red lipstick is having a moment. And having done the book and having thought about the sociological spin of all of it, I personally think red lipstick is having a moment because we're in a Me Too moment.
Yeah, so that was my question. Like, why is it having a moment? You think the Me Too is affecting that?
I think it's a time when women are feeling powerful. And there's another big part of this, which is we're in a beautifully inclusive moment. When I was a teenager, I spent a lot of time feeling like my lips were too broad and too full, and this didn't suit them and that didn't suit them, and I didn't look like this person or that person. Mm-hmm. And we live now in a culture which is gorgeously embracing every version of the way one could look or act, and that's great. And so if the message of culture is you should own your differences and own who you are and feel proud about who you are, mm-hmm. then red lipstick by definition is going to do better because the statement is feel proud of who you are and mm-hmm. feel confident in being bold. And if you have full lips like mine, for example, it's easier to wear a pale pink lipstick and be more of a wallflower. I started wearing red lipstick as a rebellion to mm-hmm. that. And mm-hmm. I think today women, particularly young women, feel more emboldened to own it.
Yeah, that's a good point. So can we talk just practically for a second? You wrote that in Dick Page, the famous fabulous makeup artist, he calls red lipstick a neutral. How do you think it's a neutral?
Well, I think a leopard print blouse is a neutral blouse. And I think
Jess will agree with you on that.
Leopard is a neutral.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
It is. Like, you could wear it with anything.
No apology necessary.
So maybe not a floral dress. Maybe not leopard shoes or the floral dress. That's my personal thing.
I would say you're right.
Okay. Yeah. It's a neutral, like, almost 98% of the time.
Exactly. Okay, so leopard is neutral. I would say silver accessories are neutral.
Totes.
But I don't mean like a silver bangle. I mean silver shoes, silver bag, mm-hmm. neutral. So red lipstick is neutral like that too. It matches everything. Mm-hmm. It looks good on everyone as long as you find the right shade. It's universally flattering. You're never going to look inappropriate in red lipstick. If you wanted to have a bold lip but you opted for crazy purple or blue or hot pink. Exactly. You might not feel in some settings quite as comfortable, but red is always going to work.
And so you said if you find the right one.
Yes.
Let's get real practical here.
Yes.
How do you find the right one?
So I'm going to answer your question, but I thought when you were going to say, let's talk about the practicalities.
Okay. You were going to ask me,
after you make out with someone, how do you deal with the red lipstick that comes off?
Okay. How do you?
Yeah. It sounds like you're prepared to answer this.
When I go on date night, I bring in my bag wipes, like face wipes, sensitive skin face wipes, because I have sensitive skin. Because the lips.
Wait, which brand?
I'm not naming brands.
Okay,
I'm Switzerland. Sorry.
Okay.
But I think different people prefer different brands. And it's less about the brand. But when I go on date night, I bring the wipes because if you have a fun date night, there's lipstick everywhere like a crime scene. So
you wipe before you're going to kiss or after you
kiss? Oh, after.
You wipe the man?
Did you go home?
Yeah, of course I do.
Or the woman. Yeah, sorry.
Well, I was
being heteronormative.
In my case, it's a man, but, to each their own, and that's great,
too. Like, give me your doll. I got to get this off your face. Thanks for the date.
I'm just picturing, you kiss them. And then you take it out and you're like, let me just get that.
Yeah, I actually think it's quite sensual to take it off too.
When my Neutrogena comes out of the bag.
This is so funny.
Right. So I have all these weird techniques. So yes, but to answer, should we go back to the shades?
How do you find your right red for you?
Well,
I'm totally disinterested in that right now.
I want to go back to wiping. Yeah. Okay, yes. So how do you find the one that you want to put all over the guy's face or the girl's face?
Right. Well, it takes some experimentation. You want to think about your skin tone. You want to think about how you're going to be wearing it. Are you going to be spending Saturday afternoon on the beach in July? Or are you going to a meeting in February? You want to think about if you're thinking about a date specifically and you're thinking about how long the date's going to be, you do want to think about reapplication and if there's going to be a spaghetti sauce or vinaigrette in your future and if reapplying might be an issue. But for example, your skin tone has more of a yellow undertone mm-hmm. to it. So you could pull off an orange-based red better than I could.
You think so? I feel like this is where you have to experiment because when I put on an orange-based red, I feel like my teeth look real yellow.
Well, if you put on something that was sheerer, that wouldn't be an issue.
And that's also the thing, isn't it?
Right.
Like if you want to tiptoe into red, you can start out with like a little bit of a sheer red.
How do you tell your undertone?
Also, I had Fraxel, so this is not my actual face color right now. It's a little bit off.
Right.
She's just like, I have a red face tone right now.
I always have a red face
tone. What lipstick goes with Fraxel?
I think the best advice for someone who's listening would be to go to a makeup counter or to a store like Ulta or Sephora because those people can help you.
Find
your undertone, yes. But a lot of it is just playing. I mean, I figured out that an orange-based red is not the most flattering on me by trial and error.
All I can think in my head is that porn line about like, you know it when you see it. Like,
oh, yeah. You know what looks good when you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's how it happened to me. Like, you go to Sephora, you put on a bunch, you're like, but when you see the right one, it clicks, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
You can feel it.
So what's
your shoulders go back a little bit.
Like,
you stand a little taller.
I see what everybody's talking about.
Excuse me. That is the magic of lipstick. You stand taller. You feel more beautiful. You feel more confident. You feel ready to face the world. You feel dressed. I mean, as I was telling you guys earlier, I work out of my home and I put on the red lipstick to do phone interviews and to do work emails. For me, that's more the definition of being in workspace than getting dressed properly.
I have friends who are like, I put on my bra when I'm ready to be working. Like your lipstick is
I can't work without a bra.
Yeah, it's your armor. What's your red lipstick?
Well, my answer is Switzerland again.
Sorry. No, come on. You can give a couple.
You must have a few favorites that you like.
Well,
right?
I would say that I'm always cycling and I use a lot of red lipsticks in a week and I cocktail. So the truly accurate answer is I tend to wear blue-reds. They suit me better than others. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes in the summertime I'll veer a little more orangey just because it feels appropriate. Sometimes in the winter I'll veer a little bit more burgundy-ish. Mm-hmm. But blue-red is always the most flattering on me if I had to choose one.
She's not giving us any names.
Yeah. I'm not going to give you any names.
Is this because you write for the Times and the Financial Times and whatever, and you try and be very neutral in your
I write for outlets for which I like to be neutral, and because I write about beauty overall, I just feel more comfortable being neutral.
Oh. Yeah. Can I ask Jess what her red is?
Yes, but I'm not going to agree or—
Of course not. No, but now I want to know, do you wear red ever?
I don't wear red that much. When I do wear red, it's definitely like for— I wear it in like the most classic sense, like a date night or, you know, a big event. Because for me, it's a signal that like, oh, we're doing this. You know, like something is special right now. I don't wear, you know, a lot of like fancy earrings or like big earrings or anything like that. So if I want my face to like just look a bit more formal, it's a red lip and like get my hair done. That says like we're leveling up. I don't feel comfortable wearing red lipstick every day. Like remember when we had Lucia Pica from Chanel on? Remember she was like kind of pushing me into a red lip?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't mind it, but for me it's a lot of, again, being practical and boring here, it's a lot of maintenance. And some days I don't want people, well, most days I don't want people to like look at me. Is that terrible?
It's
not that I'm like hiding. I just like don't want, it makes me feel conspicuous.
I think some people feel that way, and I think some people do put red lipstick in that special place of special occasions.
Yeah.
And many people remember their moms treating red lipstick like that too.
My mom never wore red lipstick. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's like I don't know. I wore it in high school, and then now like as an adult, I'm just like, oh, just like, let me get by.
Well, maybe you'll be inspired by this
podcast.
I hope I inspire people to love red lipstick.
You do. And so tell me, the whole process of writing the book, before we let you go, like what was your favorite part? Like what was the coolest thing you learned or just the most fun part of this project?
You're not going to share your red lipstick?
Oh, I feel like everybody knows it. I talk about it all the time.
Which one?
It's Chanel and it's Experimenté. It's Rouge Allure Ink.
Okay.
And actually, Lucia Pica told me she worked on that color. It has like a little bit of a brown, bluish undertone. I don't know. It stays on forever. I'm probably going to wear it to my wedding.
Oh, nice.
That's exciting.
I'm wearing a red lip to a wedding. That's like ballsy,
I wore a red lip to my wedding. Shoes to my wedding.
Oh, nice.
And to my second wedding, when I find wonderful husband number two, I'm going to wear red lipstick again.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was the best part of this whole project for you?
Well, probably the best part was the time I spent in the archives of certain brands and got to speak to the archivists of certain heritage brands. That was really magical for me. And some of the stories that I learned were so incredible. Like there's a story in the book about World War II. And at the very end of World War II, at the very end of World War II, one of the concentration camps in Germany was liberated like they all were. And the British Red Cross, when they came in as the camp was – when the British Red Cross came in when the camp was liberated, they brought in cartons of red lipstick so that the women that had had this horrendous, unbelievable, torturous experience – could have at least something to start with to inch them back to normal.
Like to feel human again.
To feel human again. Bingo.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So there were these stories that were so incredibly moving and underlined my original theory that red lipstick is a big, deep cultural thing as opposed to just a type of makeup.
Are there any cultures that don't like it?
Well, over the centuries and civilizations, there have been cultures
that
don't
like it.
Sure,
I mean like right now.
Well, none that I would want to spend any time with.
She's banned from this country because of her lipstick preferences.
Right, yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing just a little bit of what is in the book with us. Obviously, you guys can see for yourself when you pick it up on local bookseller, right?
It's my pleasure. And yes, local bookseller. There's also a Kindle edition.
Okay.
And I have both. And the Kindle edition is actually pretty fabulous.
It's a very visual book. There's lots of great posters and like archive pictures in it.
Thank you. Yes, very visual book. But also, if you have the Kindle edition, there is a section that gives tips about undertones and the red that might be right for you. And if you have it on your Kindle, you can walk into the beauty store and refer to it.
Oh, cool.
That's
useful
awesome.
Too.
Congratulations. Yeah. This is such a cool book.
Thank you so
and
much.
It's very informative.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com. We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Razor One product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.